This is a Pinball News production.
Hey, cool. Great to see everybody here. This is going to be interesting. It's kind of an experiment for us. It's but then, you know, it was based on real life. Where's the sound man? Crank this up. Right now.
Okay. Hey.
Oh, it was you, Martin? I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend you. Well, we're gonna go through our sort of a history of our time together at Atari, and then later Williams. Eugene, my good friend here, also known as Dr. J.
Dr. Yay.
Oops, that's kind of loud, see?
Let's turn him down right now. Right now. Anyway, friend Dr. J, he's had many names, some I can't say here. Long history, but first I'm going to tell you a little story about something that happened to me today.
Hold the mic closer, Steve. Hold the mic closer.
All right. Is this better?
Yay!
All right, I'll eat the thing. All right, here it is. A couple days ago, I went in and I don't like to get haircuts a lot. And if I do, I've been doing it myself with my Pelobi. I'm going to be honest, okay? Vacuum, yeah. It always comes out very even, okay? And so I go into this place. I think it was like Friday maybe. And it's near my house. And I walk in. I'm kind of scared. And I submit myself to this lady, and it's like, yo, she, come in, please. You know, so I go in. She has a slight accent, you know. And she said, how's doing? And I said, oh, good, you know. I go, what do you want? And I said, oh, I want a shampoo and a haircut, you know, the whole thing. And I said, what's your name? And she said, Dushenka. You mind if I call you a douche? Anyway, there wasn't any control over it. It was like, you know, I got to put this down. It was one of these, okay? Snick, like that. And I'm not that happy with it, but it's okay.
It looks great, Steve. I mean, Steve was trying to tell me why. I mean, it looks like every Steve Ritchie hairdo I ever saw, you know, kind of sticking straight up. And I mean, it looks great, and somehow he says it's not good.
It's good to have hair.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to start this out a little bit because I got to Atari before Eugene by a couple years. And I was like a broke musician. I had married Diana, my beautiful wife. Please stand up in the purple dress over here. Stand up. Get up. One hell of a woman to put up with this, huh? What do you think? All right. Anyway, got to Atari. I walk in the door. I wasn't hired. I wanted to talk to somebody about, I filled out an application. You walk in Atari, beautiful, hot little women everywhere. Like Nolan Bushnell, didn't care if you could solder, you know. What he cared more about is how good looking the ladies were. And they were all over the place. And they're playing rock and roll music in stereo. And I got in and I began to work on the line, making harnesses for a guy named John Petlansky, who was interesting. He looked like I do tonight, you know, every day. He'd come to work just like this. Anyway, I built him a test fixture and a burn-in oven. Now I'm going to tell you the... this company, Atari, is like located in a little, like a hippie town, okay? Los Gatos, California, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, far out, man. You know, the whole thing was, so...
That's the cool Steve Ritchie on the left up there, the young hipster, the young Elvis. There's.
Anyway, I got to tell you this because it's true. It's like every Friday at the end of the assembly line would be a tray of brownies made with herbs, special herbs. And I'm really not kidding at all. I mean, it was the absolute truth. It's everybody in the company ate them on Friday. And it's like, it's luck. I mean, I can't believe that could never happen at a company today, but, you know, it was the 70s and whatever. It was very interesting. Later on, they fired up a pinball prototype lab, and I was the first employee, I guess. Maybe I was second. They hired Bob Jonesy first, and he was my boss. And let's see. You know what? It's about this time. After 2 years at Atari, this young guy comes in from Berkeley, and, you know...
Hey, what's up, dude?
Yeah, we met, hit it off, and just became friends, and we used to... Well, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit now.
Berkeley? Yeah, this was... I kind of look like this, but this was Nolan Bushnell, actually. But there was a lot of smoke around there, too. In addition to the brownies, there was some smoke, you know. But... But, you know, I was a fresh kid out of school, and my first job was at Hewlett-Packard, which kind of like Steve Jobs was like that, too. You know, we're totally similar. And after about 3 days, I just couldn't handle it. I mean, the engineers would sit around at lunch and talk about their lawn sprinklers. And I just go, man, and I was on a 6-year project, you know. And I'm going, I'm going to really learn a lot about lawn sprinklers here. And then these guys at Atari, I'd interviewed at Atari 6 months earlier. They never came back to me. And then 6 months later, I get a call and like, hey, you wanna do pinball games? And I was like, yeah, okay. And so there I was.
There it was.
And after about a week on the job, the guy that hired me quit, and then his boss was fired. And I was the head of the programming department for pinball machines. And and I was working on this game, The Atarians, which was a cool looking game, but probably one of the worst all time games as far as reliability and
great.
A few other things.
I have another story to tell. It's a Steve Jobs story, okay? It's like I worked on a little plant called, it was a division of Atari on Division Street. And we had to, you know, it was where the pinball prototype lab was. And Steve Jobs worked there with Steve Wozniak on a game called Breakout. Every day he would come into the building wearing shorts. And he had a bottle of brown tea on his belt. And he stunk to high heaven every day. Okay. I would say good morning to him, and he would say nothing. I'm not a fan of Steve Jobs. Not at all. Anyway, I came on there and I drew a game at home because I thought, hey, these are a bunch of old guys like us, okay? And, we could do better than that. So yes. I started drawing a game at home and I brought it into Nolan Bushnell one day and I said, Nolan, I would like to be a designer. And, I showed him the drawing, and he said, okay. Next day, I had a draft.
Hold on.
It had everything that I needed to begin, you know, drawing a Mylar. Yes.
Well, didn't you first ask your boss, Geoff Harrop?
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know? Geoff Harrop, he was an Englishman, and I asked him if I could, and he said, no, you can't be a game designer. You can't be because you don't have a college degree. And some years later, but yeah, there's some satisfaction in that. Jeff, here's another story about Geoff Harrop that I have to tell. Okay, when we made Atarians, I didn't make it. You know, I helped build prototypes and, you know, and tried to make it work. And, you know, I didn't know how far away we were from being a real pinball company until I went to Chicago. Our lines were ridiculous. They had, that game had... proximity sensor, so if you had a big, you know, magnet in a cigarette pack, you could roll up the score. I mean, we were super naive, but I had the sense to look at other games and say, why are we doing these rotary solenoids and stuff? You know, and no one would go, it's cool. You know, we're going to put the display right down here where nobody can see it. We're going to light up the back box with light bulbs, and we're going to paint all our cabinets white because everybody loves a white cabinet in the business. It was insane. Also, rotary solenoids, just insane.
Never
Yeah, they were terrible. And you know what? I'm going to pass it on to Eugene. Anyway, Jeff Harrop, I had to go down to C.A. Robinson, and we had to make 12 games work in their showroom. And it took myself and a guy named Dan Corona 24 hours nonstop and opening up 25 games to get 12 in his showroom working. And we had a tablet this thick with all the problems, everything that needed to be fixed. The ball would not kick out to the trough. So I actually, I can think of things. You know, think of gadgets and devices. And so I grabbed a piece of wood and cut a wedge out of a 2x4. And I got the ball to go up and then roll down to the hole, and it worked. So we made 12 of these things. And anyway, I go back to work, and I told my boss, Jeff Harrop, we have to do something about this. And so they were very upset that, it was this bad. And Jeff said, no, you're not allowed to say anything about that. You have to bury it. And I thought about it for a day, and I talked to Dan Corona, and we went to Nolan, and because no company can operate that way, and something had to be done about it.
Here's anyway. The wonderful insides of the Atari pinball. And you notice they had the electronics in the bottom of the cabinet just sitting there waiting for screws to fall into it. And it was brilliant. And then they had, actually the display was in the lower left of the game, so nobody could see what the score was. That was the other brilliant...
It's fun to bend over the cabinet, too, when you got a board problem. You know, dig your head way down in there.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was a disaster. But, okay, I'll tell a little about when I started it, sorry.
Yes, you should.
Now that I was manager of the programming department, but there was only one programmer, so... That kind of sucked, but we were working on. I did some work on the Atarians in Time 2000, and Steve got the go ahead to do Airborne Avenger from Nolan Bushnell after, despite his lack of a college degree, which I don't know, man. Maybe you should have gone to college, Steve. Steve, it's funny, Steve and I used to sit out in the parking lot in his van. He had, this is before minivans and SUVs and all that crap, and we just kind of sat out and kind of rocked in the van, and like rabbits would come out at night, and Steve kind of would tell me his vision of the future, and... It was amazing. He said, I'm gonna make this pinball game, Airborne Avenger. It's gonna be the greatest pinball game ever. And then the guys in Chicago are gonna call me up, and I'm gonna go to Chicago and become the king of pinball. And I mean, and this is before I even finished the drawing on the game. And the crazy thing, it all came true. I mean, it's like, one of the things Steve wanted to do was have a cool light effect on the game, and he wanted me to flash lights. And the prior programmer at Atari had convinced everyone that it was impossible to flash a light. That it just, the memory would get erased, and it would forget what's going on, and you could not flash a light in a pinball game. And so I proceeded after a couple days of work, and some brownies, to flash a light. And the guys in marketing were so amazed, including a guy named Eddie Boesberg, who was from New Orleans, a great great guy.
It was a great achievement.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, thank
you're the
you.
Master.
And so he called me Dr. J after that, because I flashed a light. So
it wasn't just for that.
Right. And all these flashing lights you see out there, I own that shit. All these.
It wasn't just that. Eugene is a great programmer and certainly an individual. Does anybody else know anyone like Eugene? I don't think so. Anyway, we had a great time. making Airborne Avenger. It's like, you know, for me, it's like some stupid punk drawing a pinball machine and trying to make it work. But we were getting smarter as we went along. And, the rotary solenoids, we were always talking about them as they failed. I remember Roger Sharp wrote a review of Airborne Avenger when it came out. It said, wow, that Airborne Avenger spell out, what a mouthful. Yeah. Long.
Where's
14 letters, you know, make 14 shots. You know, well.
It was kind of hard to get, Steve. I mean, really. Especially like that lower left one, you had to like drain to get it. And, I mean, did you ever get it? Have you ever achieved that, ever?
Did I ever what? I'm not hearing you.
Did you ever get the spell out in your entire career?
No, that's impossible.
Okay.
There was also a hole you really couldn't shoot either. I mean, it was like off to the left and kind of guarded. No flipper shot to it. The ball would just maybe go there if you were lucky or, you know, biff the jet somewhere. Anyway, it looked great, you know. George Opperman artwork. George Opperman was a great artist at Atari. He was responsible for the entire package. Everything we promoted our games with, George Opperman produced. And it all matched. You know, he'd have the, you know, the game would be at a show. He'd have all this signage and everything with the same exact beautiful graphics. And he was a master. I was sorry to see him go. And anyway, moving on. You didn't program Time 2000, did you?
Oh yeah, yeah. That was kind of a neat one too. It had two. The cool thing about the game, and I did not do the play field. I didn't. It had two ways to lose. That was the cool thing about it. It had let me show you the I'll show you the play field here.
You got a picture? That's awesome.
I do. If I could figure out how to work this crappy here we go. Time 2000. There we are. Okay, there you
awesome.
Go. So you had two sets of flippers and two drains, and I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was really innovative, but and then I guess you could also drain here, here, and here. So the ball time was very short.
This was a Marty Rosenthal design, and the main feature was a captured jet bumper with rubber all the way around it. It worked so good that they had to move all the rubber a little bit so it wouldn't right. rebound and stay in there forever, and then it would became thump, thump, gone.
Well, that was the scoring feature, Steve. If you could get the ball up there,
oh, yeah.
and then you could just walk away, okay. it would just go boom, 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 boom.
And
you could just like raise your arms in the air and like you won, you know, until the post came out of the play field, you know, and then
we tried. Okay, look at the play field, folks. There's two sets of flippers. I'm going to put the mic down. First, we tried. Okay, both the right flippers on the left and right side going at the same time. Then we, you know, and the left one would go like this. So no matter what you did, it was wrong. No matter what you did, it was wrong. And then somebody else said, wait, since it didn't work that way, how about if we do this? At the same time. That didn't work either. It was the most horrible pinball design ever conceived, okay? I think it's the worst one, you know?
Yeah, it was a cool poster, though, I think, you know? The... It's very limited. It's a limited edition. Talk to us later. It's pretty, you know, that's some cool Opperman artwork there.
It's awesome. That big knee. I love that knee. Wong.
Yeah, it kind of hurts when it's in the wrong spot, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, it was a cool game. Should we move on?
Yeah. She was a ball buster.
Things were changing, and we had I don't know if you guys know Gene Lipkin. I know Gary does, and some people here. Gene Lipkin, wow, he was like the boss of engineering. He was like what would you call him? The judge?
You know, he was the enforcer.
He was the judge, the jury, you know, and the executioner.
I mean, Nolan would he'd be kind of he was an incredibly creative guy, but he never could tell you that you just sucked, and. And that's where Gene Lipkin came in. He had no problem telling you sucked. And, you know, it was pretty crazy. He would every couple of months they'd come down and see what you were doing, you know, between smokeouts. And they actually had the interesting deliveries in the inner office mail also. Anyway, so Gene would come down. I remember, actually, there was a friend of mine. His name was Dave Sherman. He was working in the video department after Jobs and Wozniak left, and he was doing a boat game. And it was one of the first boat games ever in video, and he had to spend, because this was before microprocessors, so in hardware, he had to create boat wakes and boat splashes and all kinds of cool boat effects. And after spending about 9 months on this, he was ready to show the game to Gene Lipkin. And Gene Lipkin came down, played the game for 10 seconds, and he said, "I don't like boat games." And that was it. That was it for...
That was it.
Yeah.
Anyway, after a while, we got the license for Superman.
Well, no, we didn't. That was the problem, Steve. What?
No, I'm saying okay. Atari got it, and they basically said, we're going to have a contest between two teams.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that was confusing.
No, go ahead.
Okay, anyway. Two teams, and we were going to compete for the right to make the game Superman. And one team was
Gary Slater? Howard Feldman.
Right, Howard Feldman and Gary Slater. Gary Slater was a good designer. He made a game called Middle Earth, which was pretty innovative.
Awesome game.
Yeah, it was pretty, too. It was beautiful. And I don't know, it was fun to play. And anyway, with Superman, we were getting to the point where all Nolan's ideas were, we were totally protested. We just said they all sucked. That was it. We didn't want to do that. We want to do solenoids like everybody else does. We want to use, a solenoid that looks like Bally. So we, Eugene and I began to work on Superman as a team, and Gary Slater and Howard Feldman, and it went on for a long time. It really got my chops together as far as getting a game. I think I made poor Whitewoods, and it was a long time, but they didn't mind as long as, I kept working, and one day it worked out pretty good. And
well, there was some complications along the way. At some point along the way, even though they were owned by Warner, who owned DC Comics, at some point along the way, they said, oh, we don't have the license for Superman. And so we had to change the name of the game to Rockstar.
A bit the same.
Eight letters, Roger. Only eight letters this time. Okay.
So we got the game together, and it's like, wow, we want to test the game. I go, right now? And they go, yeah, right now. Whitewood, go stick it in the arcade. So we did. And it made good money. It was weird.
It made like $400 a week, this Whitewood.
So. It did. I didn't want to brag, but
okay,
you could do it.
Okay. Right.
Anyway, when Superman was, it really wasn't, I'm not sure it was done when what happened to me happened. Finally, somebody did come from Chicago and offer me a job, and I did want to be in a real pinball company, someplace, a real production line and all that, and this guy Mike Stroll shows up, and he visits us. What was the name of the hotel?
The Marriott Great America.
Like two little girls, I bring him with me. He,
I was his chaperone.
This guy's from Chicago. Bang bang. I don't know. So we went to the meeting, and it turns out he had Steve Kordek with him too, and I knew all about them. I was watching them. We used to talk about. We'd go to the arcade and look at Williams games and laugh. And we're just so far.
They had the game.
Everybody's game was better. Everybody's game was better. And it's like.
Hot tip.
Yeah, hot tip.
Remember hot tip?
One horse biting the foot of the other. It's the artwork. It's like, yuck.
Right. I mean, time 2000 outer in this one.
Right.
I mean.
So I thought, I kind of thought, that'd be the best place for us. That's where, we could do the most damage. So I said, yeah. And I hooked up and went to Chicago, and I began to. Freak out. I got insecure. I was thinking maybe this isn't real. I'm not really going to go there. But then one day I get a big thing of flowers and fruit from Stroll, whatever. And he's like, okay, we really are going. I think, so Diana and I and our little son pack it up and get on the plane. We arrive, and my son says, Mom, the sun doesn't get us here. Yeah, it doesn't. You know, it's like there's no good weather here, really, except there's 2 weeks in, you know, spring and another couple in fall.
Yeah. Well, hey, Steve, hold on here. So it was pretty grim in Chicago?
It was grim.
How about the factory?
The factory was
okay. Here's a picture.
Big, dark, dirty thing, you know, but wow, cranking out tons of
machines.
Here's
a picture. There's a Williams factory in 1979. So it was rough.
It was a rough transition.
Yeah.
I mean, we're California boys, you know, it was very different.
Actually, it wasn't this bad, really. But this is actually the Packard factory in Detroit, but it was.
I think
it was
that's engineering when we first got there.
You know, because there were no trees in Chicago. It was, this is what it looks like today. It's pretty cool. This is the Williams factory today. Oh my God, it's like a spaceship over there, you know?
I never saw that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got there, and I, for the first time and only time in my life, I had a napkin drawing. Okay, I know you used to do it a lot. I don't do that. I think about everything and then go full size, you know, just go for it and do a lot of erasing on the way. Erasing, redrawing until it's right.
Anyway, but this was on the plane.
I drew Flash and came up with a name for it, and it's never happened again. And I knew that I wanted to have bright lights on the game, a flashlight, because, come on, you step on your brake on the car, wah, big red light in the back. We have that power in a pinball machine, definitely. We just have to control it. So it turned out to be a pretty good game for Williams, and I think it ran like 19,000 something, and we were building them for a year, and then I was a rock star. Okay, it was a long time ago, Anyway, the one thing that was wrong was there was a coder there. Coder. You know, we used to have, you know, call a programmer coder.
Actually,
that's
actually,
rude. Coder.
Now, Steve would call them subcoders.
Subcoders.
Actually. That's right.
Subcoders.
If you're
anyway.
Really good, you could be a coder.
No, the lowest of low is a typist. That's as far down as you get. Okay. Anyway, Eugene decided to come aboard.
Well, yeah, that Steve called me up. You know, because I had gone and seen that Packard plant, and I said, I'm not going there. I'm out of this gig, you know. And Steve, like a year later, calls me up, and the one thing you got to know about Steve is a lot of rock stars, they go through wives. You know, they have, like, this wife and that wife and the seventh wife and the eighth wife. Steve goes through programmers. So,
hi, Lonnie. Hi, Tanya. Hi, George. Not really.
And
I mean, they should have the same stamina that I do. If I have to work that hard and that long, everyone else should have to also. Why not? You give the effort? Well, it is a little different. You know, programming causes brain damage.
So I guess Randy, I guess, quit. And some kind of
his last words were, including to Stroll and everybody else, "You're all scum." I was thinking, he's right. He's right. We're all scum.
So I guess I was missing pinball and I'm missing Steve. So I said, screw it, man. I'll go to Chicago. And as I was walking in the factory, and I went to see in Stroll's office, Randy Pfeiffer, the ex programmer, was moving out, and he had these floppy disks in his hand, and he said, you know what? You're not getting the code until I get my check. And so, you know, I figured, well, this is kind of the way they do shit in Chicago, you know? These guys are hardcore. So, but, you know, so that was, I said bye to Randy, and I was the new Steve Ritchie bitch.
You were not. You were always my friend. I respected you. Anyway, well, maybe a little.
That's right.
Wow, we began working on Firepower, and we were both really excited, and I can't explain it. I don't even remember what happened, but I just started on the drawing, and it took a couple months to get the first drawing together, and everybody would get scared because I would have a big pile of eraser stuff, and my electric eraser, I moved a lot of things.
They had paper in those days,
yeah,
you know?
Paper.
paper and erasers and, you know, all that kind of crap. You know, it was real. It was real, man.
Anyway, we got it together. And
Well, the cool thing about working with Steve is that every Steve Ritchie game, Steve wants to create the greatest pinball machine ever made. You know, it's like every game is like a crusade. And nothing matters but making this game the greatest game ever. And so the firepower was this kind of crusade. And it was like, what can we do that no one had done before? I mean, let's face it, we already flashed lights. What else, you know? And in Flash, they flashed bigger and brighter lights. You know? So we had to think of something newer. And so we were kind of inspired by the Bally games of the 70s, the original Fireball and some of the multi-balls of that era. And so we wanted to make an electronic multi-ball pinball, which I guess also was impossible. I guess some programmer had said that at one point.
Yeah.
And maybe,
yeah, you know what?
Maybe it was me.
We interrupt this talk for a very important thing I got to do right now. Okay, hang on.
Little Marky is coming up.
My brother, Mark Ritchie. Do you know why you're here?
No.
Okay, well.
I don't.
Dude, you have been inducted into the Pinball Hall of Fame. Mark Ritchie, our latest and newest member. Think of it. Indiana Jones. Diner.
Thank you very much.
Taxi. Ooh, Taxi. Gone fishing, leave a message.
Who is responsible for this? There's somebody in here. It's at my table, I'm sure of it. This is really great. Thank you very much. I'm really honored.
Dude, check it out.
Wow, look at that.
Awesome.
Very cool.
For the camera.
Thank you. Before I can accept this, I need a couple of people to stand up in this room. One of them is right over there. Python, stand up, please. This guy brought my career full circle when I started making pinballs due to his creativity, his input, his unselfish and unabounded creativity just paid off tenfold, I think, for both of us for the most part, but this proves that this time it's for me. And also, this woman over here, my wife Trudy, she needs to stand up too.
Trudy!
Don't let anyone bullshit you. It's true. Behind every good man is a really strong and great woman, and that is my great woman. Thank you.
Cool, man. Awesome. Well, I just wanted to say something. You know, my sister-in-law, Trudy over there, I named her, and the name I gave her was Sharka. It's a good name for her. All right. Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
We're going to continue our thing.
Here Thank you, man.
Got to go on. All right, so where were we, man?
Firepower, man. We were like... I guess we were getting
about ready to wind it up. Yeah,
okay.
I see yawns and stuff.
All right. Are we on the time? Yeah.
I have some jokes, but
it was a good
there's
game.
At least one or two children in here, so that's not going to happen.
Okay. It was a cool game. I guess, and then after Firepower, Steve, I'm amazed at when I look at all the pinballs out there. It's, today, yesterday or today, and playing them. And you look at all the, like, multi-level extravaganzas out there, you know, all with blinking lights. And but I think of a game that sadly I didn't work on. It was called Black Knight. That was a game that Steve did after Firepower, and it kind of ushered in this whole era of multi-level pinball. And that was a really, really awesome game. Steve, what led you to make that innovation?
Actually, a lot of people were talking about multi-level pinball. You know, Steve Kirk talked about it. We all talked about it. Guys from Greg Kamik might have even talked about it. You know, we all did, but I'm just the guy that did it. I found a way to do it, and so we did it. And it was interesting to connect a playfield with ramps and that. And it was fun to make, and also it's like, I could you know, be my alter ego, which is a very evil man. It always has been. I can't help it. I just can't help it. And I don't know. That's how it happened.
And then unfortunately, I was an ex-programmer at that point, and the great Larry DeMar was the programmer.
DeMar was a programmer. And you know, they split us up, which was kind of a bummer. But you wanted to make video games. You know you did.
That video crap.
This is the man who did Defender. You got that? Really? Defender.
Okay.
This is the man who did Robotron, my favorite video game of all time, Robotron, with Larry, and spectacular games. He also did the, you know, Cruisin' World, Cruisin' USA, nailed down the driving market. It's incredible. And now Eugene has a very large company, Raw Thrills.
And large in my own mind. And large in my own mind.
Okay, large. And, it's a
decent
size.
But we're having fun doing video games.
Good
and
size. He's got a rock and roll machine going there. And he's been producing good games. And Big Buck Hunter is another one from George and him. Yeah. And they've had some really good hits.
Well, Steve, I'm seeing all this cool things going on with pinball and you selling $10,000 pinball machines and stuff.
We used to talk about it. We're getting there. We're getting there. I'm not sure it's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I'm available for programming. It's getting interesting.
Our jobs. Okay, some people don't realize it in game design. You know, our jobs are to make games that make money for the company. It's not just about if we don't make money, then pinball doesn't survive. So that's what it is about, and you have to wrap your head around that while you try to have fun and make a game that people enjoy. If they enjoy it, the money will come.
Yeah, and it's like, and you can't have too much fun while you're doing a game. No. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of pain, and there's a hell of a lot of pain after you finish the design and you're down on the assembly line for the first week trying to put these things together.
First month.
And a month, or in the case of a Steve Ritchie's game, 2 or 3 months, but a few adjustments. But the interesting thing is, I remember Steve. This was back in the day when we had Firepower on the line, and I don't know, or no, actually this was F-14. F-14, which was F-14. Let me show you a picture of this one.
We may not have been getting along so well. I remember you calling me Alzheimer's.
Right, and you you started it, Steve.
I did. I called him Dr. Doolittle, and little would be done.
Yeah.
Wasn't true, though. It was never true.
But let's see. Here's the cabinet here. But F-14 was like the era of excess. You know, the 80s, you think about the era of excess, and it was like High Speed had 3 balls, so F-14 had to have 4 balls.
Right.
You know, and High Speed had 1 rotating light. We had to put 3 of them up top, this one. You know, it was just, we just beat them. We had to do everything right. And I, as lucky, as luck would have it, Steve got into a huge fight with Larry DeMar. Or I guess it was actually Williams Management, wasn't it?
I'm not actually hearing that. What did you say?
Larry DeMar got into a fight with Williams Management.
Oh, yeah. He was cranky.
There was something cranky going on there. We used to call him Cranky Linky. Linky Cranky. But he wanted them to put his salary into escrow. And at that time, the president of Williams was a bean counter, an accountant. And he didn't go for that. So
I remember Lou Nicastro going, "What do you think about this little bastard? Should we get rid of him?"
But
he's really good at what he does, Lou. I don't know, you know. Let's think about it a little bit. It's just my idea, sir.
So anyway, so Larry, unfortunately, Williams, you know, didn't appreciate him for some reason. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy. And so I got the call from Steve to do this F-14 game.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. Even working with Alzheimer.
It was fun. It was it was a lot of fun. It's always fun to work with you.
But
always,
anyway, so
always has been.
So getting back to my story, Steve.
Yeah.
We're on the first week or month or 6 weeks of trying to get this F-14 game working, and it had all kinds of crazy ramps and ball poppers and things. And Steve comes down to the assembly line. He has a little tag on his shirt. It says, "Hi, my name is Asshole."
I didn't. He wasn't supposed to say that.
But it was, and it got things. It's the Steve Ritchie edge, you know. And I think that's one of the key things of success of Steve's career is he not only has the passion and the creativity, but he has the edge to get things done.
Yeah, we do get things done. We get things done. I also like to, like I'm thinking about Mark Panaccio when he came. He's a programmer. He came to Williams and. A couple days after I'd started talking to him, I said, "You've just got here, and already I don't like you." he said, "But why?" And I go, "It's just a joke. It's okay. I like you. It's all right." Anyway, you know what? I got to tell you something.
Okay.
Gene Jarvis, you are hereby inducted in the Pinball Hall of Fame. Did you have any idea? Did you know?
No.
Good. Awesome. Eugene Jarvis. And I think that about wraps it up for us.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Any final words, Mr. Inductee?
Like I said, I'm available, Steve. That's all I, just put my salary in escrow. That's all I.
All right. Live long and prosper.
Awesome.